Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our topic today is a fascinating one. It's a little bit of history and some grandeur, too. It's about the restoration that's going to be going on in the immediate future of the historic ceremonial second floor courtroom in the courthouse on the Civic Center Square in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And I'll be talking to a couple of attorneys who have practiced there, as well as their fathers. And in sandwiched between those, I'll be talking to the architect for the project. But first, I want to begin with Terry Rose. Terry Rose is an attorney here in Kenosha. Terry is also a good friend of mine, dating back to our college days and high school debate days, if you can believe that. Terry, good morning. Welcome to Community Matters.
Good morning, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Terry, you, your son, have practiced in this courtroom. It's a family affair for you. I want to just hear from you, Terry. What's it like for you when you're in that courtroom? And how does it feel when you're in the presence of that room and the presence of the others that you know in your family and your friends in the bar who have practiced there and your knowledge of the huge history behind that place? Go ahead.
Well, I find it a great privilege to be someone who has practiced law with their father as well as a son. And we've had a long history with that courtroom. I know my dad practiced there and before Judge Drury, Alfred Drury, as well as Judge Eugene Baker. I have practiced there for many years, and so has my son now since he joined me. And we are in court, each of us, not always in that room, but anywhere from 10 to 15 times a week, many times in that courtroom. It's a beautiful room. It brings back many memories for me, both personally and watching others. When I was in high school, I remember going to a trial, Leo Vaudrill representing Mrs. Hockadall in a murder trial. That's one of the reasons that I find that there's a lot of history there. My grandfather, while practicing medicine, also had a law degree, but he never represented anybody as an attorney. He was always a physician.
Wow, Mr. Rose, Vaudrill, that brings back memories from my youth. Wow, that goes way, way back. Now, there is something about that courtroom that has a beauty that is, to me, was mesmerizing. We're unfortunately both old enough to remember that room before it was kind of destroyed with the dropped ceiling and the air conditioning. I wonder if you want to talk a little bit about what it was like before the arrival of the emergency air conditioning of that room. Share with us.
I don't really have a recollection of it. I have seen it. It was remodeled during an era when it was popular to drop a ceiling and cover up all of the beauty that was on the top of the room. Quotations, glass, stained glass windowing there. And that was supposed to save heat and make it look more modern. That was the thinking of that era. I think it's now recognized that this is a historic room that is like many other historic courtrooms that are not even in use. I recall going to St. Louis and going to the courtroom in downtown St. Louis where the Dred Scott case was tried. Well, this is on a comparable level, but this is one that is used every day today by Judge Schrader.
I want to talk a little bit about that, Terry, because we call it the Historic Ceremonial Courtroom Restoration Project to bring it back to its amazing beauty. And it was designed by an important architect at the time. There are some important murals there. And of course, that beautiful stained glass laylight is really a marvel. But this is not just something that sits as mothballs. This is a living, working courtroom. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
This is a courtroom that used every day, just like all of the other courtrooms. I think the reason it is called a ceremonial courtroom is every time a judge takes office, is sworn in, or many other public officials, a county executive or other county officials, it is used as a ceremonial courtroom. And that's where it gets its name. It's not like I say the Dred Scott courtroom of St. Louis, which is no longer in use and people just go there and look about it, look at it and then read about it. This is one that has the history behind it. It's currently in use. It's a current operation every day, but the ceremony is an appropriate place to swear in people who lead this city and county.
So that's a really important thing for us to understand. Now, this is a major project. I don't want to get into all the gory details because we will later with the architect and with another one of our local attorneys. But it's a massive project. The Jeffries Family Foundation has put up a challenge grant. A $2 has to be contributed for every $1 of their match. And the fact that they accepted this project, if you're in that restoration world, is a big deal because they only select a few projects at a time, and they are ones that they deem really architecturally significant and important. So we're actually quite honored here in our community to be a part of it. And as I'll disclose more in detail later, I am involved in this project. I don't want to pretend I'm not. I'm involved in this just as much as you are, because I know you're going to be joining me and so many others in the community to contribute to this project. And they're seeking gifts, large and small. It's what it's going to take to complete this project. We're looking as a committee to raise $1,350,000 to get the huge match from the Jeffries Family Foundation of $675,000. Now, Terry, when we talk about this courtroom, I think it's important that, and the project administrators have emphasized to me, that they're going to be using it off court hour times for educational purposes, and it's going to be available for tours so that someone coming to Kenosha could see this incredible courtroom, this beautiful architectural gem, as well as the beautiful architectural landscape gem we have at Library Park, the Gilbert M. Simmons Library. Tell us a little bit more about the educational things that you've seen happen there and that you imagine will be happening in the future with students of all ages.
Many times during the course of trials, teachers bring their student class in there to watch justice in action. I think the expansion of that idea with promoting this to others outside of the community is certainly an appropriate thing to do. The stained glass, which has been hidden, the ceiling, which attached to it air conditioning and the other duct work, has to be removed, and one will see the beauty of that ceiling. And something else which is important is the famous quotations of many of our great heroes of this country, historical figures, which are on top. And I think that that is an important factor for us, particularly today, when some of our history has been called into question. And this will remind all of us in this community and elsewhere that this is one of the three great branches of government that keeps law and order for this country and protects our sacred rights.
This really does keep that whole Civic Square area in sort of tip-top shape, too. We've taken care of the old, what used to be Mary D. Bradford High School when we were kids and went there. Now it's Reuther. And yeah. We have, of course, the new post office and the old post office on the other side, on the west side, which is now the Dinosaur Discovery Museum. And that square has always been an important central point in Kenosha. And this sort of keeps that civic center going. I wonder if you just comment on the interesting appearance of that square and its importance for us as a community, because a lot of communities don't have that. And if they did ever have it, sometimes they've let it go to ruin.
That is true, and I applaud the leadership for maintaining that. This is a spot where people on a summer day can take a look around and see what a beautiful group of buildings together that have been maintained that look very similar. We're, I think, very fortunate here to have that.
It's a really important piece of historic legacy, right in the center of the downtown district of the city. And it is special. You don't see that kind of a square in every town you visit. It kind of reminds me of some towns out in the east, in the northeast that I've been to. I don't know if you have any recollection of other places that have a civic square like this, but I think it is a rather special place, isn't it?
It is. I think those kind of small Eastern communities and other historic cities like Philadelphia, Boston, and others have recognized the history there. I've gone to a number of courtrooms around the state, and many of the new courtrooms are always built outside of the center of the city. And I think that has always been a mistake. It's wise to keep your city government in the heart of the downtown community as a reminder of the importance of it all. It's not the location of a shopping center near the interstate highway to encourage people who are going to shop, but it's downtown has always been filled with government, legislature, executive, and judiciary, and I have always supported that as a member of the county board.
Well, thank you, Terry. It's really been fascinating to chat with you about your history and your experience in the courtroom. And it sounds to me like you've never seen one that's more elaborately gorgeous and put together and reminds people of the majesty and importance of the law.
Absolutely. I salute those guys.
Well, thanks a lot. And now I think we're going to move on and hear from the architect.
Well, thank you for having me.
And now I'm going to turn to a conversation that I've been waiting to do for a long time, and that is to talk to Stephen Marpole. Stephen is a consulting architect. He's with Insight Consulting Architects, headquartered up in Madison, Wisconsin, and he has an office here in Kenosha at the Kemper Center. Good morning. How are you today, Stephen?
I'm perfectly fine, thanks. How are you?
All right. Well, Steve, tell me a little bit about the second floor courtroom ornamentation here on Civic Square. What makes this, from an architect's point of view, a special place, sir?
Well, as we stand here looking at it today, not much. It is just like any other room because of the drop ceiling that was put in the 1960s, and they overpainted all the decorative arts and they covered a lot of gold leaf. So I'm kind of leading into the fact that when it was first built, it was an extraordinary place. It wasn't opulent, but it was very carefully detailed and ornamented, absolutely gorgeous. They used gold leaf, composition leaf, beautiful stained glass. And the room was, in my opinion, it was rendered at a very, very high level that you would expect to see in buildings like the Wisconsin State Capitol or the South Dakota State Capitol, which this decorative arts team actually worked on after they worked on the Kenosha County Courthouse building.
Well, you're making it sound like this is not only special because it was lovely, but because the people who worked on it really were at the top of their game.
Yes, absolutely. The artists that worked on the murals that were painted on canvas and then have been applied to the walls, when you walk into the courtroom or the courthouse, there are some very large murals on either side of the main entrance. They call it the atrium. And then at the top of the stairs, there's a piece called In Memoriam. But inside the courtroom as well, there are two pieces that are designed and executed very beautifully and are still incorporated into the architecture of the place as we know it today. When the room is restored to its original beauty, those paintings, those murals are going to stand out all the more. And they're really very beautifully done by very famous people.
Now, the materials that we've talked about and that people can see online, and we'll talk about that later in the program, include a description of the ceiling and something that they call a ley light. You want to tell the rest of us what that means? Because I remember this beautiful stained glass window it looked like when you were seated in the courtroom. What's that about, Steve?
That is the ley light. That big, beautiful stained glass window that you saw was a ley light, which is the horizontal plane at the bottom of a skylight that has all of the artistic glass, all the leaded glass, all of that stuff. The skylight itself is about 10 feet above that in the roof. It lets all of the natural light in. The light passes through the attic and then through this ley light that provided, well, a beautiful amount of light, but also a functional bit of light is for the function of the courtroom.
Will that skylight exist still to bring outdoor light into the courtroom, or is it going to be backlit with some like LEDs or something?
No, the skylight is there. When we restored the exterior with Kenosha County, we were the architects for that as well. We installed a new skylight in the location of the original with the anticipation and the hope that someday we would be bringing this room back to its original glory. So it's there. There is also auxiliary light that is going to be included in the skylight space so that when we get to certain times of the year, when by 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, it's pretty dark, we'll be able to augment that light and get close to a, call it a more stable lighting scenario for the courtroom.
Well, that's terrific. That is a very, really far thinking and wonderful approach. I didn't know about that. I think it's really marvelous that that issue of the old skylight has been taken care of, so we don't have to worry about leaks and drips and going back to that piece of the work. It's already done for us.
It's already done in anticipation of this, yes.
Well, that's terrific. Let's talk a little bit more about what makes that courtroom so special. There's quotations around the ceiling. Have some of those been covered up, and will those be restored now?
Yes.
Seems to me portions of them are gone now. It was very inspirational.
Yeah, it's a portion of Abraham Lincoln's Lyceum Address. And I don't know all of the history of the Lyceum Address. I just know that it was very important in terms of his beliefs as a young man on the rule of law and how we are a nation of laws and we must never take the law into our own hands. I'm paraphrasing it very poorly. It's a beautiful quote, and it rings the entire room from beginning to end, one side to the other. And it's in gold leaf, very, again, not opulent, but very nicely rendered so that when you walk in that room, you definitely feel like you're in a beautiful courtroom. So anyway.
Now, I recall that there were leaded glass windows.
Yes. They were leaded glass by what we can tell. And I haven't seen any other documentation other than shop drawings. Shop drawings are the drawings that window manufacturers and installers use to communicate to architects and owners what it is they really plan to do based on the drawings that were given to them. Those shop drawings indicated that they were bronze windows. So there would have been leaded glass, but the actual frames themselves would have been bronze. I'm thinking that it's possible that it was that way. The way the details looked, it was that way, but we are proposing as part of this project potentially restoring those with replicas that would very much replicate what was there.
So do you have photographs of what those windows looked like, or do you just have to kind of guess based on what was current at the time?
So yeah, we do this a lot where we will sleuth out a bunch of different things. We found, one of my colleagues here found some photographs at the Kenosha History Center that were of extraordinarily high resolution. They're really, really crisp resolution photos. They're the same photos that you see in the booklet that was published in the 1920s when the building was dedicated. But the negatives that were used must have been enormous. And the resolution on those photos is phenomenal. We were able to look at the photograph and identify the pattern of the leaded glass. And even though it's in black and white, we feel we can hit the color on the leaded glass as well.
Oh, that's terrific. We've got to restore those windows because that would be really marvelous.
Now, it would be.
When the current HVAC was installed, I'm not going to get into whether they could have done a better job or not back in the 60s when this was done. My recollection was that this was done at breakneck speed, and it was all about making it cool, and no one seemed to give a hoot about anything else at the time, which was very disturbing. Now, today, we're not going to have an unair-conditioned courtroom. You can restore the kind of HVAC you want in the third decade of the 21st century without having that dropped ceiling. Is that a major, major operation? And where are you going to put the HVAC equipment anyway?
Yeah, so it will be a major operation. Just to touch on the 60s and 70s, the people that did what they had to do to get the room cool, did what they had to do. And unfortunately, budgets rule so many times in this world. It did in the 60s and 70s as well. I'm sure speed was a big factor, but yes, they did some real damage to the interior as the ductwork that is required for cooling a space of this size needed to move from one part of the room to the other. And yeah, it was pretty significant damage. So what are we doing? What we're doing is we are going to be removing all of the ceilings and all of that mechanical equipment. All of that is going to go away. And then we're going to open up in very strategic locations in the ceiling. We're going to open up the attic so that we can get all of the mechanical equipment up in the attic. In order to do that, we're going to have to build what we have called a trapeze system. So we're going to have to take all of the wires that hold the decorative historic plaster. We're going to have to take them, and we're going to have to bridge from one side of the room to the other with new steel, top and bottom, so that we can create basically a space in the center of the attic that we can put all of this equipment. That's going to be a very tricky and very difficult thing to accomplish, but this sort of thing can be done, and we've planned for that. We're also going to be adding things like up in the attics that you'll not see. We're going to have a catwalk. So there is enough room up there for the ductwork and a catwalk so that people can maintain things more easily and more safely. So we're making a lot of different improvements mechanically to the system. We're updating and replacing equipment that is at the end of its service life. So it's one of the things that has made this project an important project.
So the HVAC had to be redone anyway.
That's correct.
Now, is there any connection between the HVAC and that courtroom, Stephen, and the rest of the building, or are they independent?
No, they are tied together. So when we did our design, we needed to track down where everything went, because we're making changes that will impact other areas, particularly the southwest corner of the courthouse. So we had to very carefully work through all of those issues so that we didn't not only as time goes on, but during the project, those are working parts of the courthouse that need to continue to work. So we also had to plan for temporary considerations as it relates to cooling and heating those spaces.
Will the courtroom be operational throughout this period or not for certain periods of time?
It'll be offline because of the nature of the ceiling. So if you can imagine, the entire ceiling is painted and gilded, molded plaster. There is going to be essentially a platform that is going to be built up in the air so that a person, five feet six can work on that ceiling safely. And that's going to require shutting down the courtroom for a period of time.
Now, I gather that all of the engineering work that can be done ahead of time has been done at this point, or am I wrong? Because I know we're starting the fundraising campaign, so we must have a pretty firm idea of what this is going to cost. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So what we did is something we've done in a number of different locations. We did it at Reuther High School when that project went through, is we took a small portion of the project and we essentially did everything to that portion of the room that we needed to do. So we uncovered everything. We figured what the materials were, what the colors were, what the types of gilding were. All of those sorts of things were looked at, and we uncovered not one but two different paint schemes. So the paint scheme that you saw as a young person might not have been the original paint scheme. Yeah, so all of that process happened before doing the big project. We did a small portion, so there was some cost involved, but what we were able to do is we were able to identify every flaw, every crack, every hole, every bit of paint, and identify all of the different things that need to be done so that when the bidders bid on this work, they have a full set of documents. So we have a strong idea of exactly how much it should cost. That we have to say now, though, that we've had some odd bidding climates with current, these times in COVID, and now with the war in Russia, that there has been some instability in these markets. But we have a very good understanding of the cost of the project.
And finally, quickly, once this work commences, about how long will it take in years and months?
Well, it depends entirely on the contractor that's hired. So I'm thinking it's going to be approximately a year. It could be less, it could be more, but I think it's going to be offline for about a year.
Thanks a lot. Wow, that was great. Stephen Marpole, the architect for the project. Thanks a lot, Stephen. And now I'm going to turn to Neil Guttormson. Neil Guttormson is a member of the Blue Ribbon Committee for the Historic Ceremonial Courtroom Renovation Project. Attorney Guttormson, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Len.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about what got you motivated to be on the Blue Ribbon Committee for the Historic Courtroom Restoration, and what motivates you to be so deeply involved, sir?
I think the motivation came from the fact that, number one, I am kind of a history nut and like to understand history, so that any kind of history, but American history probably more than world history. And two, my father was a judge in Kenosha County during the 60s and 70s. And I've seen his picture in the courtroom, his portrait, I should say, not his picture, his portrait in the courtroom many times.
And you've practiced in that courtroom for how many years now, Neil?
I was admitted to practice in 1974. So that would be close to 48 years.
Had you ever seen the courtroom before the dropped ceiling was put in for quick air conditioning?
Not to my recollection, Lynn, but I could have been in there if my father was there and I was a kid. I might have gone into the courthouse, but I don't recall it off the top of my head.
I had the privilege of being in there as a cub intern reporter for the Kenosha News when I was a young man, and I was a stunningly beautiful and also moving place. I think the majesty of the quotations in the room certainly deeply affected me as a young person. I'll never forget that. Now, this project has a lot of meaning for you personally. Can you tell us how you feel about it in terms of the meaning it has for the community at large?
I think the most exciting element of the project is to bring back to life the beauty and the architecture of that courtroom so that others can learn to appreciate it and admire it going forward. And personally, it's a diamond that's been covered up, and now that they'll see that ceiling and all of the other architectural detail of the courtroom, I think that it'll be more meaningful for both the people in the courtroom who practice there daily and for guests or other persons who would have the opportunity to visit the courtroom.
And it really kind of fits in with some of the other architectural gems we have in this area, particularly the Gilbert M. Simmons Library, which has a wonderful history in terms of the architecture of the building itself and the landscaping around it. Really having this project done is going to really kind of put Kenosha on the map to, if you're going up to Racine to see the Frank Lloyd Wright buildings, you better stop in Kenosha to see our magnificent gems too, right?
Correct. No, that's a good analysis.
Now, you were telling me before we went on the air, Mr. Guttormson, that your wife, while poking around some dusty secondhand bookstore upstate, came across something about our courthouse on Civic Square. Share that with our listeners. I was fascinated by your story.
Thank you. Yes, my wife and my daughter-in-law were doing some antique shopping in Minocqua, Wisconsin. And my wife came back from that venture and handed me a book. And it's a souvenir book of the Kenosha County Courthouse. And then it also includes bits of yesterday and foundations of today, which I thought was a clever title. It's authored by a gentleman by the name of Otis L. Trenery. I don't know who that is, but and he also gives credit to his wife, and he relied on a lot of history of Kenosha County provided by a gentleman by the name of Francis H. Lyman. And I want to quote the foreword of this book because it's very, I think, creative. It said, we're talking about the author, we believe, and he uses we because his wife is included, we believe the knowledge of cost in time, in effort, in money, and in sacrifice will enable the young people who begin where we leave off to build more appreciatively and so wiser and better than they would otherwise do. Hence the story. And so it kind of gives you the reasons why they wanted to summarize the detail of the project of building the courthouse. And a couple things that I was unaware of, and now I am, the design of the building is Italian Renaissance, which is kind of unique for Kenosha. And on the south facade, there's this inscription, quote, erected by the people of Kenosha County to the cause of just and capable government. Now, to me, in this world we live in today, that's pretty cool to think that our forefathers were thinking of that same principle as we now are espousing on a routine basis. So I guess that's what's interesting further. And I it's in some of the literature that we have for seeking people to support the fundraising requirements. In the courtroom, on the cornice, is a quotation from Abraham Lincoln on, quote, the law. And his quote says, "Let every American, every lover of liberty, every every well-wisher to his posterity swear by the blood of the revolution never to violate in the least particular the laws of the country and never to tolerate their violation by others." I mean, that's just a very, shall I say, unique and special quotation that's right there before your eyes if you're ever in that courtroom. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. And I guess
certainly agree. That quotation is from an address that President Lincoln gave before the Young Men's Lyceum in Springfield, Illinois, back in January of 1838. Isn't that something? And I'm impressed with the fact that the foreword of the book that your wife discovered talks about the inspiration that the building and the courtroom was to have in their minds on others and on future generations. And we feel the same way today, nearly all these hundred years later, that restoration of that beauty and that tribute to the spirit of the law will inspire others. And that courtroom is going to be used for educational purposes in the future, won't it?
Yes, and I think that was one of the other areas that excited me to participate in the fundraising, because I want young people to learn about the history of the courthouse and the history of justice in Kenosha County. And this is a perfect learning tool for young people to feel good about what's happening in Kenosha.
Now, this is a big deal campaign to do this project. Total cost of this thing is going to be a lot of money. And we have a challenge grant by the Jeffries Family Foundation. They're putting up $675,000, which they're going to match $2 for every one contributed by the rest of us. So that leaves a mere $1.35 million left to be raised. But we're taking heart because we've already raised more than $500,000 and we're on the way. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing this radio program. And I need to disclose that I'm a member of this project. I'm a member of the same committee that you are, Attorney Guttormson. And I'm going to be hosting a reception for information at my home about this later on this year. And I'm a contributor. So I just want people to realize that I'm in this all the way, waist deep. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about this campaign and how people can participate and where they can make their gifts. I want to point out that this is a not-for-profit operation. It's being done by the County of Kenosha, and the Kenosha Community Foundation has stepped up and is going to be the fiscal agent. What that means is that they're going to receive the contributions for this match from the Jeffries Family Foundation. So people can give a tax deductible to the extent provided by law and IRS regulations, make a tax deductible gift for this project and do it through the Kenosha Community Foundation in any one of a number of ways. They could do it through a donor advised fund. They can do it through an outright gift. You can mail a check. You can walk in the door with money, preferably a check, not cash, and give online. Neil, why don't you talk to us a little bit about that? And there is a place online where people can go to see some more information, both in print and some terrific videos of what this is going to look like when it's done. Why don't you fill us in, please, sir?
Yes. just to articulate a little detail on the Community Foundation's role, it's referred to as being a fiscal sponsor. This particular fundraising event is that if you get on the website for the Kenosha County Ceremonial Courtroom Restoration Project, you'll get all the details of who's involved, what's involved. But the key element of that website is to give people an idea of, you don't have to give it in one total deduction or payment. You can make a three-year pledge. In other words, if you want to stretch your pledge out over a three-year window, you can. Some people, and a lot of people do it for their tax deduction for each calendar year. Maybe it's easier to do it over a period of time, but I like that approach rather than saying we need to have this money by tomorrow, because the project is scheduled. I think we have 2 years to raise the money. And so that's why they're giving participants a three-year window. And we have some various categories. At the lower level, you can become what they call a friend of the courtroom with a $5,000 pledge over 3 years. You can become a bronze sponsor for $10,000, a silver sponsor for $25,000, and a gold sponsor for $50,000. And I want to tell you, I can't tell you who the donor is, but I have had the great, pleasure that one of our local businesses did pledge $50,000, but they actually wrote a check. So that was a very big part of the initial money that's there. Then we have a platinum sponsor at $100,000, premier sponsor at $250,000, and then a legacy sponsor at $675,000.
Thank you. That's a great wrap-up of the giving levels, and those are going to be recognized on a donor wall permanently outside the courtroom, and gifts of any amount are going to be very much appreciated. We need a lot of small gifts as well to make this happen, right, Neil? And those are all going to be on a display in the courthouse as well. So people can go to the website that has this information, which is www.kenoshacounty.org/support-the-courtroom. Isn't that a wonderful URL? www.kenoshacounty.org/support-the-courtroom. And you see videos there. You'll see text describing the project and a button to click so that you could make a donation right then. Neil, how would you sum up as we close the program, the importance of this project to the community?
I think it's extremely important, and it's extremely gratifying to participate in the project because we all have a tendency to take things for granted, especially the beauty of architecture and buildings that we have in the city of Kenosha presently. And this is a nice way to give back and say, hey, I appreciate the beauty. I want to see it. And I want my children and grandchildren to enjoy it as well.
Thank you so much, Attorney Neil Guttormson. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta encouraging you to get informed and get involved and get on board with this campaign if you can. Good day.